You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. What's going on? Happy Friday. Welcome on into First Take. I'm Charlie Arnold. We got the guys here in studio, Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith. We also have Paul Feinbaum joining us here to kick things off. And Paul, you aren't here under the greatest of circumstances. We're still happy to see you. But we did just learn yesterday that Heisman hopeful Trevor Lawrence has tested positive for coronavirus. So let's get right into that first things first. Now, what this is going to mean is that top-ranked Clemson will be without their quarterback this weekend against Boston College, as he must quarantine now for 10 days per the ACC's medical advisory group. His status for next weekend's game versus number 4 Notre Dame, TBD at this point. Meanwhile, the first college football playoff rankings will be released on November 17th, and according to Heather Dinich, the selection committee will consider availability of all players. Trevor Lawrence did post this on social media following his diagnosis, saying, quote, "I have tested positive for COVID-19 and my symptoms have been relatively mild while I'm following the protocol from Clemson and the ACC. The only thing that hurts is missing an opportunity to be with my teammates this weekend and play the game I love. I hate that I can't be there, but I will be watching from isolation, pulling for our guys while I wait for the opportunity to rejoin the team. God bless and go Tigers." Stephen A., we'll start with you here. What is your reaction to the positive diagnosis of the COVID-19 test for Trevor Lawrence?
Well, the first order of business is to wish him nothing but the best of health and hopefully that he'll get back on the field and what have you. That's number one. That's what we wish for anybody that comes down with this virus. Number two, am I concerned about Clemson? Not in the slightest. Even without him, they should beat Boston College. Number three, even if they were to lose, I don't think that they'd fall out of the top four, which means they'd still be right for a playoff spot. Number four, we speak about the greatness of Trevor Lawrence. We'll monitor this as it goes along. He's 31-1 as a starter this year. He's completing 70% of his passes. He's got 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. We know that he's the prohibitive number one pick in the upcoming NFL draft. He's that elite. We understand that. So if he does come back, probably against Notre Dame, I'm not going to be surprised by that at all. You know, we'll watch for how he's playing and what have you to really, really gauge the significance of the impact of COVID-19, him contracting that virus. Having said all of that, the only thing you could say is what Max Kellerman, more so than anybody else here, has religiously been stating about the need to take this virus seriously, about to treat it with the level of due diligence and seriousness that it deserves, to understand that even though everybody is not passing away from it, you don't know what's going to happen to each and every individual that contracts the virus. And you also know that it's not immune, and nobody is immune to it. I mean, the bottom line, it can catch old, it can catch young, it can catch black, it can catch white. It doesn't matter. And so you pay attention to it, you address it with the level of seriousness that it deserves, and then all you can do from there is move on and move forward to the best of your ability.
Yeah, I mean, I echo your sentiment. I'll say that Trevor Lawrence was one of over 88,000 new diagnosed cases yesterday.
Record
I thought it was 90.
It is 90,000.
It was 90. Yeah. Last I checked, it was 88. That's how fast it's changing. Over 90,000 in, you know, yesterday. He's one of over 90,000. Mm-hmm. And the reason is this has not been taken nearly seriously enough. We were late to shut down. It's, you know, 15 going down to zero. No, it was 15 going up to over 90,000 in a single day. Millions and millions and millions of people. And it is true, the death rate from it has fallen precipitously because we understand much more about it now. Still don't know a lot about it, but understand much more about it. And so the treatments are better it's been more effective in terms of the way people have been treated. Still, the lowest possible estimate is like 1 out of 400 would die from this. So like you would not get on an airplane if it was like, yeah, you gotta, I mean, of course it's likely he's gonna get better and he's gonna be okay. We don't know what the lingering effects will be, et cetera, but obviously our thoughts are with Trevor Lawrence. I agree with Stephen A. Clemson will be fine, provided he comes back pretty soon. And the issue is not Trevor Lawrence or even his teammates, even though there does pose a risk for all these guys. It's not about young, healthy people primarily, although we've heard stories about people having lingering effects, and we don't know what it'll be, glaucoma and stuff like that later on. It's about the most vulnerable among us. That's why he has to quarantine. He's got to go be by himself so that the virus runs its course and it doesn't spread, so that people with underlying conditions don't die. There are already intensive care units in hospitals that, once again, are overloaded. They're filled to capacity. And people and officials in various states are saying, hey, we really need help right now because we're being overwhelmed. That's what crushing the curve is about. I wish Trevor Lawrence the best. I hope no one else on the team has it. So far, it's so good. And otherwise, I agree with Stephen A. Smith.
Paul, what's your reaction?
Yeah, I think everyone has made very interesting and eloquent points. I think in this case, there's more at stake for Trevor than just getting back for the game. I think in sports, we just think about these guys as being Superman, and he has been Superman. But just because he's a great athlete and the best player in college football doesn't mean that he is going to go through this as easily as other people. So, you know, we're watching when was the onset? We think it was Wednesday, maybe it was Tuesday. Why is that important? Well, the ACC guidelines stipulate that he has to quarantine for 10 days and then pass through other hoops. So will he or won't he be eligible for the Notre Dame game? It's only the biggest game of the year in college football. It's at Notre Dame. And if he goes through all this and it is fine, then he will be able to play. But there's so much more at stake, as both of you have pointed out. I mean, this is the number one pick in the draft. I hope, and I know you, all of you agree, that he just doesn't come back to be a hero and to play football because he can, because this game is really not that important. I know Clemson fans and Notre Dame fans are going, how can you say that? Well, if Clemson were to lose this game and it's relatively close, then they still have a very smooth path to the college football playoff. They win the rest of their games, which they will. They play in the ACC championship game, perhaps against Notre Dame, and win, they're in. And that's all there is to it. So I hope everyone is calm. I hope the doctors are judicious and make the right decision. But it is interesting. 2 weeks and 2 days ago, we were sitting here talking about the other biggest name in college football, Nick Saban, testing positive. It turned out that it was a false positive, and everyone forgot about that. But this is a case that I think everyone will be watching, guys, and Charlie, and learning from.
Well, one of the things that comes to my mind, and listen, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of Dabo Sweeney. He's done a sensational job at Clemson, but he was facing some criticism earlier on before the season began because there were people, at least in the media, who were accusing him of not taking it seriously enough at that particular moment in time. I don't know specifically what he said. I don't recall specifically what he said that got people in an uproar about some of the things that he was saying, but I do remember that he was taking some heat for that along those lines. And so now that this has happened to his quarterback, clearly there's a level of seriousness that you have no doubt he's taking now. I'm not going to assume that he didn't take that it seriously earlier.
A lot of people have changed their tune, though, since the earlier months.
Well, there's no question. You have no choice. You have no choice because of the level of seriousness that, you know, for me personally, when I butted heads to some degree with Max Kellerman over it, it wasn't because I didn't take it seriously. It was because I was saying there's a difference between being lax about it or being willing to say it's a risk I'm willing to take because I'm out here starving and I need to go back to work because I can't afford to pay my bills. I said those are two different scenarios to me. I don't lump them all in the same. You do have people out there who are stupidly not taking this seriously at all. The hell with it. It's a hoax. It doesn't exist. And all of this other nonsense. Now, of course, we're not talking about, you know, those people are a different separate category and I won't even attach a name to it. But even now, even still maintaining the position that, excuse me, if you're out there starving, you're going to take your chances and go out there to work, to earn money, to pay your bills. In the end, the bottom line is everybody needs to take this serious. This is not a hoax. This is not a joke. It is not a conspiracy. It's the real deal. And the world recognizes that.
Let's keep in mind, it was Sean Doolittle, the relief pitcher for the Nationals, who said months ago, sports, you can think of it almost like a reward for a functioning society, for a healthy society, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't really earned it, but we want it anyway. We want our cake and eat it too, right? Mm-hmm. We've been irresponsible about it from the highest levels of our federal government, and it trickles down. It's everywhere. And yet we want to play sports anyway, right? Mm-hmm. To give you an example, Canada, well, we share a border, right? Mm-hmm. And a porous border. And they hit the record high yesterday also, under 3,000 cases. Now, they're a much smaller country. But even as a percentage, we're three times whatever it is, the percentage, they have taken it much more seriously. So we have to understand we're operating and playing sports in the context of a situation where we really haven't earned it. We want it, but we haven't earned it. And the virus is out of control right now. It's amazing to me that baseball finished their season, mm-hmm. that football has gotten as far as they have, and that mm-hmm. college football has gotten as far as they have.
I think it's appropriate to bring Paul Feinbaum in on this, because I got a question for you. I mean, you're the mouth of the South, even though I consider you somebody that's incredibly knowledgeable about football overall, not just college football, and damn sure not just the SEC. I can ask you anything about football. You know what the hell you're talking about. I would ask you this question just from a standpoint of you being stationed in the South where you are. There are people out there who have looked at certain, you know, from a geographical perspective, certain points in our society and said they've taken it less seriously than other places. Do you find that to be the case, being in the South, that is, you know, that's a reality?
Of course, Stephen A., and you know, it's disheartening at times to hear people being dismissive of it. And certainly November 3rd has a lot to do with that. That's election day, in case anyone missed. And you know, again, you know, it is a problem down here. It's a problem everywhere. But you know, hopefully, cases like this bring more attention to it. And there's a natural reaction. Oh, he's young. He'll be fine. Sure, he will. Because most have been. But the interesting thing is something you said a minute ago. Clemson was really one of the worst hotspots early in the summer. They came back from the quarantine, from the lockdown, and they had 35, 40, 50 players testing positive. And it's interesting because a lot of people, back to what you said a minute ago, were saying, well, that's good. We got a better chance to win the national championship now that we've already gotten it out of the way. And somehow, obviously, that's a ridiculous statement, by the way, but that's what fans say. Trevor Lawrence escaped that. So now, in a perverse sort of way, this could be positive, because maybe people in that state and others will look at this and take it more seriously. But Stephen A., I hope people do. I know you have talked about this with Max many, many times, but sports does make things easier to understand for a lot of people, and maybe there'll be some good from all this. And let's all hope, as you said, that he comes through it well.
What you hope is, I mean, because some people get it, and it's like a kind of mild cold or a flu, especially apparently young, healthy people. So, of course, that's what we hope for Trevor Lawrence. But if people use that as an example, see, there's no big deal. Again, it's not just about Trevor Lawrence or his teammates. It's people with older people in nursing homes, people with diabetes, people with underlying conditions, where this can be fatal and has been fatal for about 250,000 Americans at this point. So if he, I get it. We want Trevor Lawrence to get better as quickly as possible. I hope the symptoms are mild, but I hope it's as you say, Paul, that he serves as an example of a warning. Hey, anyone can get this, and not as an example of people saying, see, it's not that bad. It's just kind of like the flu. We can go out there without a mask. This whole idea of don't tread on me. I don't want to wear a mask. It's really not about you. Wearing a mask and being careful is a selfless act. It's a selfless act you're doing for others.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Max. But I think it's important to really peel from what Paul is saying in this respect. Paul can talk about it. I can talk about it. You can talk about it. And we're not wrong. But the reality is to a lot of people, to millions of people, we just whistling into the wind in their ears, right? But when somebody like a Trevor Lawrence comes down with it, and he's in an area where people may not have been taking it seriously or whatever, just because he has it, you hope that that will
force. You hope that's the effect.
You hope that's the effect.
My point is like, well, I hope it doesn't have the opposite
that's
effect.
Right. That's what you, that's right.
I hope it doesn't have, I hope it's like, well, it's nothing. It's okay. Look at that. He got like the flu and he got better and everything's okay. I hope he does. I hope he has mild symptoms.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's what you hope.
But that's what we're saying.
As Paul said, it's an election year. You can vote early. I voted yesterday.
Not
vote.
Now. Yeah. Now you got to go to the polls, though.
I went to the polls.
And guys, it's not even just the symptoms that you experience while you have the virus. I mean, there are people that then go on to have respiratory issues. I mean, maybe mild, but some more severe, even those who are in tip-top shape. So we definitely hope that is not the case for Trevor Lawrence. But Paul, thank you so much,
sir.
Always appreciate it.
Sure.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
On Sunday, it is a battle for the AFC North. As we know, the Steelers have really sweated it out. Stephen A., what's up?
I've got to interrupt. I'm sorry.
Oh, what?
Why is Ryan looking into the camera like he's still playing safety about to hit somebody?
Maybe he is.
I mean, Dave, what's up, bro? It's Friday. You on first
Hey, I was
take?
Listening.
I'm just checking.
Steelers, Ravens got
him in the
mood. He was
looking at me and Steelers, Ravens and all. I mean, look, man, I was just looking at you like, damn, who's he about to
I
hit?
I was listening to the buildup.
Okay.
Hey, I was just listening to the buildup, man. It got me fired up.
Let me get to that buildup, guys. It is a big buildup.
Yeah. Check it. Lamar Jackson's neither one of us is Lamar Jackson. Calm down.
All right, I'm gonna take it from here, guys. The Steelers have sweated it out. They are the last unbeaten team in the NFL, but that status, of course, going to be tested on Sunday. They go to visit the Ravens, who are 5-1 and also fresh off of a bye week. Yeah. So he needs no introduction at this point. Ryan Clark is here to join us for this conversation. But Stephen A., let's start with you here. Will a loss be a big deal to either team?
First of all, as an aside, let me say this. First take in every show is always better. When Ryan Clark
I agree
is
with
on
that.
The air. That's my brother right there. That's
appreciate you, my dog.
Let me just be very, very clear about that.
Having said that, the Steelers traded that he is, okay? Let me say this. When you really, really think about this, when I said, listen, when you're talking about whoever loses this game, the bigger impact, to me, it depends on how the Ravens lose. Max, to me, it's all about Lamar Jackson. I care about the outcome from the standpoint. I'm a Steelers fan, and I'm rooting for the Steelers, and I'm picking them to win this game. But what I'm saying is this. Steelers defense is going to show up. We all know if you watch Bart Scott on this morning with Keyshawn and Jay Williams and boy, I mean, this brother Bart Scott just crystallized for you what the Steelers Ravens.
These brothers are all ready to play. Ryan Clark, everyone in this rivalry is ready to play.
So it's special. So it's a beautiful thing because you're playing smash mouth football and it's about what time is it? It's me against you. Let's get it on. And so you expect. They're going to have their moments, but you expect a nail biter. You expect, you know, spectacular things to take place. Just smash mouth football, rather. Here's what I'm looking for. Lamar Jackson is the quarterback of the 31st ranked passing team in the National Football League. That is second to last for those of you who don't know. There's 32 teams in the National Football League. When you rank 31, that means only one team in the entire NFL is worse than you. I'm looking for Lamar Jackson to see what he does in this game. You know what? You can win 20-17. You can win 27-24. You can win 30-20, whatever. What I'm saying is he can't have a horrible game. He can't look like trash throwing the football. That's all I'm worried. Everything else I expect. I expect Ben Roethlisberger to have his moments. I expect him to have other moments where it's not so bright. I expect both defenses to show up, play smash-mouth football. I expect James Conner to chew away at some yards, but he's no Le'Veon Bell or anything like that, okay? I expect Mark Ingram to get his a little bit. I expect Lamar Jackson to run the football effectively because he's so elusive coming out of the quarterback position. But in the end, it comes down to, how does he look throwing the football?
You know,
everything else you can predict.
You know, this is amazing because if you know, like, whoever your sports enemy is, right? Your sports enemy is the people closest to you, whatever. It could be your brother, your father, your mother, your sister, whatever. Your best friend, your colleague at work, right? It's whoever, even if you're rooting for the same team, damn it, you'll find something to argue about, right? And whatever they think, you'll find it. So thinking about this game last night, I'm thinking, oh, Stephen A is going to be all hyperbolic. What a big deal this game is. And I'm going to be like, yeah, slow down. But you know what? Because you just undersold it and you're my sports enemy, I got to tell you, this is a bigger deal than you're making it out to be. I was prepared to say the opposite. I thought I was going to have to pump the brakes. This is a bigger deal. This is Ravens Steelers. Let me tell you something. In the NFL right now, it is the number one rivalry. I'm a Giants fan. The NFC East is trash garbage. There's no rivalry that matters in the NFC
East
right now.
Even though I think Joe Judge is not doing that bad of a job.
But
go ahead.
But the NFC East, I'm not going to sit here and say the Giants rivalry. Stop it. They're meaningless right now. The AFC East got no rivalry like this. If you look throughout football, it's not like the Bucs and the Saints are natural longtime rivals. If you look at the NFL, you could say Seattle and San Francisco right now, maybe. Something like that. But guys, the number one rivalry in America's number one sport at this moment is the Ravens and the Steelers. The Steelers and the Ravens. And the reason is not just because they're battling for supremacy in the AFC North at the moment. It's because it also goes back. It's because it's been a great rivalry and it's a great rivalry right now. And it's because Lamar Jackson and Ben Roethlisberger have never faced each other. So I was going to stay here. Hey, whoa, Stephen A., wait a minute. Wait a minute, Ryan. This is only a medium deal, right? Because it's still, you know, early-ish in the season, and both these teams can still make the playoffs, and not let's not oversell it. But I think you undersold it. This is a big – this game is a big deal compared to what you said.
Ryan?
Yeah, this is huge. This is huge, and the reason it's huge is because it's back to what – it's supposed to be. The reason this became a rivalry was because whoever won this game was going to win the North. That wasn't in question. But usually the winner of this game had an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. You're going to have an opportunity to be the elite. I mean, there were 2 years that we played to see who was going to be a Super Bowl champion or an AFC championship representative. And that's what made it a great rivalry. And on the other side, it was the way that the games were played. I made a statement this morning that it never mattered to me who I played the week before the Ravens, but it always mattered who I played the week after. Because whoever I played the week after, they were going to get a lesser Ryan Clark. They were going to get a lesser Pittsburgh Steelers because of the body blows you take the week before, because of the intensity of the game. So this is highly important. Here's the other reason that it's more important for the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson than it is for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Lamar Jackson, it's not in question that he can win football games. It's not in question that Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are a good football team. But it is in question, can you win meaningful football games? The Kansas City Chiefs' regular season football games for the Baltimore Ravens the last 2 years have been meaningful football games. Lamar Jackson hasn't won those. The divisional playoff against the Tennessee Titans last year was a meaningful football game. They didn't win that. The year before, the wild card round against the Los Angeles Chargers, they didn't win that. So now you're going up against the undefeated rival, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have Ben Roethlisberger, who have T.J. Watt, they have Bud Dupree, Cam Hayward, all of these stars that we know, that we see, and that know that coming into a game with you, you do one thing really well. So they're going to force you to do the other thing. So when all of this wraps around, when we talk on Monday morning, we're going to talk about exactly what Stephen A. said we are, or were. We're going to talk about Lamar Jackson. How did he play? How did this offense look? How did the team that sacked him last year, that turned him over last year, how did they play against him? This is unfortunately going to be a referendum or an indictment on Lamar Jackson's entire career. MVP won't matter. What he's doing this year won't matter. It's going to talk. We're going to talk about Sunday and what that means for Lamar Jackson.
We all agree about
in the Baltimore Ravens' future.
We all agree about that also because, as you said, if you classify this, like, you know, put it in a category with the Chiefs games and the playoff games, and he loses this, that's losing, you're 0-6 in your most important games, and you're basically undefeated every time else. But let me say this also about Lamar. Last week, Pittsburgh beats Tennessee and in a battle of undefeateds, and the whole thing is, it's like country hardball, right? Fastball pitcher, fastball hitter. Tennessee wants to run. Pittsburgh stops the run. It will come down to, can Tannehill beat you? He almost did. He played well. Special teams made the difference. Lamar Jackson is Derrick Henry and Tannehill in the same player, right? So they are going to stop him. He wants to run. They're going to stop him. Can he beat them throwing the ball? I mean, clearly that's what it's going to come down to.
But the fact that it's going to come down to that makes it a big deal that all eyes are on him. Of course you're going to watch the game. Of course it's the top rivalry. Of course you're looking at them. But what I'm saying, Max, is that the expectation is what it is. That's why it's the rivalry that it is. For example, you can make an argument. Obviously, that's one of the best rivalries in sports, okay?
Yep.
To me, when I think about rivalries in sports, guys, I think Duke, North Carolina. Do you know why I think about Duke, North Carolina basketball? Because it doesn't matter how much Carolina has stunk or Duke has stunk or whatever. When they go against each other, it's 99% of the time, it's a nail biter. That's the Steelers and the Ravens. So what are we looking for? We know what to expect from that. The key person is the new guy, Lamar Jackson. He ain't had this before. He about to see something new this weekend. And we're going to see how he responds to it. I want to see him throwing a football. He can run against anybody. I want to see what he does.
Can he run against the Steelers?
Yes. Any quarterback. I mean, quarterbacks that can run. Because you drop him back to pass, they in coverage. You know, you can get some yards. Bottom line is, can you throw it? That's what I want to see.
You know, Tomlin's got something for him.
You know, rivalries have lots of different hallmarks. One of them, though, is the level of competitiveness between the two teams. Really doesn't get much better than the Steelers and the Ravens. They both have the same amount of regular season wins against each other at 23. In the point differential and averaging, Steelers average 19.5 points, while the Ravens 20.3. Really doesn't get any closer than that.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is a must-win for us, and I'm going to control the things that I can't control. Losing is not acceptable in this locker room, in this county, in this state, in this area, in this region. So Cameron Newton, you need to pick your expletive up.
Not a happy Cam Newton after an embarrassing blowout 33-6 loss to the 49ers last weekend, in which Cam Newton was benched at the start of the fourth quarter for Jared Stidham. The Patriots, who are now 2-4, know this weekend is a must-win against Buffalo, who has been having major struggles of their own. Now, as a reminder, last weekend, Cam Newton completed just 9 of 15 passes for 98 yards with 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Not a good look. Ryan Clark still here with us. Max, we'll start with you. Yeah. Are the Pats out of the playoff picture if they lose this weekend to Buffalo?
They're actually not. I can't say they are. Obviously, if you're 2-4, the deck is stacked against you at that point. And also, you may just, if you're not good, how are you going to win your games? But let's say they lose a real tough, close game that where they show they can play, they just lose the game. And I think Cam Newton has the right attitude, by the way. No excuses. No defense. No receivers. No excuses. He's got to do better. I think that's the right attitude. But keep in mind who else is in the division. The Bills, as you said, are struggling. You know who they have next week? Seahawks. It's not an easy game. They could easily lose that game. The Dolphins are about to start a rookie quarterback. The Jets are the Jets. The Patriots get to play the Jets twice. In fact, when you look at the Patriots schedule, the two that you circle and you go, those are going to be tough games to win, are the Ravens and the Rams. And they have some other teams that could beat them. You know, the Cardinals, Arizona could beat them. They have to play the Bills again, the Dolphins. But mostly it's teams in their division and their fate is in their own hands. And it depends upon the way they play. If they play well and win those games, I don't see any games where you go, oh, my God, just pencil that in as an automatic L. There are two that look like they'd be L's. But even there, if they're good, they can be competitive in those games. And who knows? Meantime, the Bills have to play not only the Seahawks, but also the Niners and also the Steelers. Like, the Bills have a tougher schedule than the Patriots coming up. And so, yes, look, would you rather be 6-2 or 2-4, right? Like, of course. But I would not say they're completely out of the picture, provided that they can get their act together.
For me, I say it would be over. I say that, you know, they're not going anywhere. They lose this game. And here's the reason why. You've dominated the AFC East for many, many years, for the last two decades, okay? You already are 2.5 games back. This is absolutely, positively a must-win for you at Buffalo. You're at Buffalo. You've been looking like straight garbage, okay? The Buffalo Bills were struggling because they had lost two straight, but then they got a bye week. They had the Jets. That's a bye week in my estimation. I mean, they're not playing an NFL team. I mean, we understand how awful and pathetic the Jets are and how Adam Gase needs to go because he never deserved a head coaching job to begin with, but that's a different subject for another day. In the end, what it comes down to is this. This is a must-win situation for the New England Patriots. And Cam, I appreciate what he articulated. I appreciate the urgency of the moment. I appreciate the fact that he said it's not winning is not losing is not acceptable in this locker room. Well, what the hell does that say about Ron Rivera all those years you were playing with the Carolina Panthers? Was losing acceptable then? I mean, what the hell does that mean? So I'm sorry, last time I checked in the National Football League, unless you're a member of the New York Jets, losing is absolutely not acceptable. So I mean, they deserve it, damn it. So the point I'm trying to make is that of course this is a necessary situation, not just because of the record, but because of the way the Patriots have looked. My attitude is very simple, Max and Ryan. Knowing the conditions under which you're entering this game, 2.5 games back, you're full 3.5 games back. If you lose this game within your division, you see the rest of the AFC, the Chargers, the Chiefs, okay, the Ravens, the Steelers, you know, the Tennessee Titans, the list goes on and on. You're not getting a wild card coming out of the AFC East. You're going to have to win that division. And if you lose this game knowing all of those cards are on the table, it tells me a lot about who this Patriots team is for this particular season. And by the way, I'm also not ruling out. I mean, this is blasphemous to say this. I'm not ruling out the fact that the Patriots might not mind losing. Because guess what? 7 for Trevor might not be. The Giants might not be the only one. Or the Jets might not be the only one with that attitude.
Could you imagine if the Patriots got Trevor Lawrence?
I'm just saying. If you live, you Bill Belichick, listen, Stidham ain't the answer. Cam doesn't appear to be the answer.
Let's give Cam a minute.
I said doesn't appear.
Hey, I would say this, Max. Max, the Patriots getting Trevor Lawrence in a year like this would probably be like the Spurs getting Tim Duncan.
Yep.
That's how I would feel if that happened, to have Popovich and Tim Duncan and have Trevor Lawrence and Bill Belichick. I've been playing double dutch while you guys were talking. And anybody that's ever played double dutch, you know, man, you always trying to figure out when to get in the rope, right? You bouncing back and forth. I've been playing double dutch, not with whether or not if the Patriots lose, it's over. I've been playing double dutch with whether or not it's over already. And I don't want to say it's over already because I want to believe in Cam Newton. And so you can see that he's bought into the Patriot way, right? He's bought into the fact that losing is unacceptable. He said last week the excuse bucket is empty. He's now said this week that in anywhere around Foxborough, Massachusetts, losing is not a thing that can happen because that's the Patriot way. That's what the New England Patriots have always known. What they've also always known was Tom Brady. What they've also always known is having a way to fix it. They've also always known looking extremely competitive, seeming extremely competent. The team we watched last week against the San Francisco 49ers were not only outplayed, out-executed, they were out-coached. And yep. I don't know how many times I've watched a Bill Belichick New England Patriots coach team and thought to myself, you know what? The dude on the other sideline is better than the dude that's wearing the hoodie for the New England Patriots. And that scares me. That makes me feel like they might not be able to pull it out. And so though we're focusing on Cam Newton, the most important person and the most important piece of the New England organization as they travel to Buffalo is Bill Belichick. He got to put the GOAT hat on. He got to show us that he was the main reason for this long streak and long stretch of excellence that we've seen out of New England Patriots. The defense has to play better. The special teams has to come up with a play the way Max mentioned the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels has to find a way for this offense to move the ball, without Julian Edelman. This season was supposed to be Bill Belichick's greatest coaching accomplishment. But this game, this particular game is going to be his greatest coaching achievement if he wins. This is going to be the game he showed us that when it comes down to locking in for 1 week on the X's and O's, that no one can be better than Bill Belichick. Because if they don't win, it's over.
You know what's weird is that football, the team at the end of the year is not the same as the team at the beginning of the year. Like the year they went undefeated and the Giants beat them, if you would have said halfway through that season the Giants are going to beat the Patriots in Super Bowl, you get laughed at. You were laughed at if you thought that going into the game, right? But the Giants ascended and the Patriots maybe plateaued or descended a little bit. When you look at this year so far, what's bizarre to me, game by game, they beat the Dolphins by 2 scores. You look back, you go, that's actually a quality win. They lose to the Seahawks by inches, right? Like on one play, by a goal line stand, by Bobby Wagner, one of the best in the game. You lose like that. They beat the Raiders by 3 scores. You look back, that's a really good win. They lose to the Chiefs, but that's without their quarterback and with calls going against them that were egregious. You say, wow, they really played well. But then they lose to the Broncos.
Denver.
And then they get squashed by the Niners. They're going in the wrong direction, which is bizarre.
Yes.
Makes me think, especially that Cam has also gone in the wrong direction, that there's something wrong with Cam physically. Like there's something that's not right. How does the team, and especially the quarterback, 15 passes, you throw the ball 15 times, you throw 3 INTs? How does that happen? He looks so sharp against Seattle.
I mean, Max.
And by the way, he had COVID, and they couldn't practice for 2 weeks.
I was about to say that as well. You know, we talked about Trevor Lawrence early on in the show with Paul Feinbaum. And, you know, I heard Charlie mention that, you know, we don't know how this affects people post-COVID. We don't know what it does to your body. There's been some mention of some people feeling like they were in the fog. Could you imagine being in the fog and trying to play quarterback? And this is in no way an excuse for Cam Newton, but this is the year we are living in 2020. These are the things that we have to figure out. But Cam Newton already said it. That's not an excuse. People in Foxborough, people in the organization, people that counted Cam Newton out, the 32 teams that passed on him, including the New England Patriots, are saying right now, you know what? We were right. He was done. He can't do it anymore. So not only is this an important game for the New England Patriots as the rest of their season is concerned, this is an important game for Cam Newton and the rest of his career. They have to win this game. If they don't, they are out of the playoff push.
Right.
And I believe Cam Newton may be out of a job.
I'm going to close this segment in the appropriate way, fashion. I apologize in advance for what I'm about to say. Cam Newton, two of the last three games, has completed 60% of his passes. Two of the last three games. COVID-19. Okay, we got it. Y'all mind explaining to me 6 of the previous 8 years of his career where there was no COVID and he was completing 60% of his passes? The fact of the matter is, he's always had a problem with throwing the ball accurately. He's a great, great athlete.
Why are you bringing up old stuff?
Hold on, whoa. I'm talking about a consistency pattern. Come on now. All I'm trying to say is, yo, look, we love Cam. We love his personality. I don't like them damn outfits, but I don't like the hairdo. But we love his personality. We know he's intelligent. We know he's an elite athlete. But purely, specifically, when it comes to throwing the football accurately,
I'm telling you right now, the numbers that we're lamenting over the last 3 weeks are indicative of most of his career. It's a fact. I have the numbers right in front of me. They look the same.
However, the last time he was seen healthy with Norv Turner, he was having his best year ever statistically from the pocket, right?
With Norv Turner.
Okay, but you would think in New England, it would be the same thing. Yes.
Really? And, oh, you would think that.
And by the way, early on, did he look good? And also, he won an MVP in a year where he wasn't with Norv Turner.
Ryan, could you help me out here?
Do you think he looked good early in the season?
I thought he did. I thought he looked fantastic.
And then he got COVID, and then he sucked.
I did too.
Wait a minute.
Josh McDaniels had Tom Brady.
Yeah.
When he didn't have Tom Brady and he was a head coach, I look.
Well, yeah. he didn't have Tom Brady as a head coach. The Patriots have a whole array of issues going on right now.
And actually, according to Sports Illustrated,
he wasn't a head coach.
Guys, listen to this. I don't know if you've heard this. According to Sports Illustrated's Albert Breer, the Pats have told other teams ahead of the November 3rd trade deadline that they would be willing to listen to any team for anybody.
You damn right.
So a full rebuild could very well
be a consideration.
So there's some news I'm sure we'll be discussing in the upcoming days.
We've seen Belichick trade Pro Bowl defensive players in the middle of for draft
yeah,
picks.
Yeah, Stephon Gilmore,
in the middle of championship seasons
from
and stuff.
That possibility. All right, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate
you.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, some breaking news here on First Take this morning. The new-look Nets continue to build their coaching staff, and our Adrian Wojnarowski reporting this morning that former Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni, along with former Spurs assistant coach Ime Udoka, are finalizing deals to become assistant coaches under Steve Nash with the Brooklyn Nets. Now, Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash, they are no strangers to each other, as Steve Nash played under D'Antoni as the coach of the Phoenix Suns in the mid-2000s. So, Stephen A., what is your reaction to D'Antoni heading to the Nets?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say this to Ime Udoka. Congratulations to him. Another assistant coaching job. I think that he's moving along the lines because he wants to be a head coach someday. He deserves an opportunity to become a head coach someday, and I'm definitely rooting for him. Other than that, I want to say hello to Neil Long, you know, who knows him very, very well, and the Sanai Lathans of the world and the Kerry Washingtons of the world and the Regina Halls and Regina Kings, all of these fabulous black actresses that don't get enough love. Well, you're going to get it from me. Okay, now, having said all of that, let's get to Mike D'Antoni. I don't care. I mean, he's right where he belongs. He's an assistant coach, particularly for Steve Nash. Now, if anybody should hire him as a coach, as an assistant, it should be Steve Nash. They had great success together in Phoenix. They won 65% of their games. They went to a couple of conference championships, even though they never made it to the finals. And clearly, that was when Mike D'Antoni really made a name for himself, revolutionizing the game of basketball, Max, on the offensive side of the ball because of what he was able to do with their offense. But I will tell you this. Mike D'Antoni, lucky to get that job. Because here's the reality of the situation. You've been a head coach. Phoenix, New York, L.A., Houston, never got to an NBA Finals. Obviously, injuries and bad circumstances had a lot to do with
it. Got close a bunch of times, though.
He got close. Yeah. He got close, but never got there, right? And this man is a master at departing from jobs right when he knows he's going to get fired. Now, if you listen to Tillman Fertitta, and people that know him, they'll tell you that he might have wanted D'Antoni gone, but if basketball operations had pushed for him to stay, he would have listened, et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line, it was time for a new coach in Houston. Mike D'Antoni was led to believe by somebody. I don't know whether it was his agent, Warren Legarry, or somebody. But he was led to believe there was a line of opportunities out there for him. The reality is there are people that are more deserving of these opportunities if indeed you want to win a championship. Mike D'Antoni, to me, has proven that he can innovate. He can be innovative offensively. His style of play can be
very, very entertaining. There's no question about that. And if that's what matters to you, if that is a priority, Mike D'Antoni is your guy, whether it's an assistant or is that a head coach. If you're trying to win, meaning win the chip, no, he ain't the answer. Now, this is Steve Nash teams now. He's the head coach. And we understand that. And having KD and Kyrie with Mike D'Antoni's mind on the offensive side of the ball, I think it's going to help them immensely on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, they got to get somebody else in there. Bring Elson Turner there, too. He did a great job in Houston last year. Bring somebody else in there to coach
that coordinator.
Because there ain't no way in hell Mike D'Antoni. Listen, take the Jamie Foxx teasing me about this all the time. Take the D out of D'Antoni. It's still hell after all these years he hasn't figured out that you have to play defense at some time. That's what he went on Instagram and imitated me
saying. I was using that 10 years ago.
I'm just telling you what Jamie Foxx said. So, I mean, that's all I'm trying to say. Mike D'Antoni, an assistant in Brooklyn, it's cool as long as he's not passing over other dudes that have been starving for opportunity to get the latest one. I'm good.
I've been calling him Antoni for years. No D, right? But
right.
You're being unfair to D'Antoni.
I don't think so.
Here's the reality. Mike D'Antoni has never had a team where you look at the roster and you go, that's the best team in basketball. And so he's never won a championship. And yet he's gotten closer than he ought to have gotten, given the fact that there were better rosters out there. For example.
Give me some, because I don't know.
Golden State with KD? Who was going to beat Golden State with KD?
You picked them.
Right. LeBron, largely because of Maury and D'Antoni. LeBron had Kyrie and Kevin Love, and as you said, looked at Golden State and was like, we got no shot. Like, and I don't even hold it against them.
I do.
KD joined a 73-win team and steamrolled the league, except they had to play a Game 7 on the road against Houston, against a far inferior team. But that far inferior team should have beaten them. They got ice cold, one of the coldest shooting performances in the history of basketball. And still, Golden State only beat them by single digits in Game 7. D'Antoni has gotten more out of teams than most coaches. Now, do I think he's the best coach in the world? No, I don't. The reason I think there are better coaches than D'Antoni is because he needs his star player to buy in, and when his star player doesn't buy in, instead of figuring out a way to get him to buy in, sometimes D'Antoni's just like, oh, well.
Will his star players buy in then?
I'm sorry, I thought that was a part of coaching. Yeah, far be it for me.
I'm pointing out why I like some coaches better than him. However, when his star player does buy in, doesn't even have to be a great player. Like, Jeremy Lin won a great player. He's a good player. But he bought into D'Antoni.
He had a good month.
They almost never
Jeremy
lost.
Lin.
Excuse me.
Jeremy Lin.
Can I get
had
to
a
my
good
point?
Month back. Well, I mean, you the one brought up Jeremy Lin.
That's right.
Had a good month.
That's my point. With Carmelo Anthony, who didn't buy in, with Kobe Bryant, who didn't buy in, they weren't the right players for the right coach, right? He couldn't do much. But even a talent like Jeremy Lin, who's not an elite talent, he could make a winning team. With a talent like Steve Nash or James Harden, he gives you a championship contender. So who is he for? As a head coach, I agree. If I were the Nets, I wouldn't take D'Antoni as the head coach. But I'll bet you there were opportunities for him to be a head coach. Because if I owned or I was the GM of a small market team who's been irrelevant, I know I hire D'Antoni and give him the right kind of point guard, suddenly we're relevant.
No.
Suddenly we're making the playoffs.
Let me interject with the news.
Go ahead.
Remember, I told you the job in Philly was his.
Yep.
But Ballmer fired Doc Rivers. Got let go of Fox. They can talk about part ways. Sure. They want to. Ballmer made the decision to go in a different direction. Philadelphia got wind of that news when Woj reported it, and I went on the 6 o'clock Sports Center. Doc Rivers available, and that changed everything. D'Antoni was going to be the coach of the 76ers the next day.
Yeah. Doc Rivers has a chip, and D'Antoni doesn't. But I understand that decision. My point is, that's not a small market team. Philadelphia is, what, the fourth largest market?
Yes.
Fourth, Philly or Houston? The point is, if you have a small market team and you want to be relevant and you want to make the playoffs and you want to be on SportsCenter, ask D'Antoni, who's a decent point guard who you could build an offense around, and all those things will happen for you. So the fact that he took this job to be an assistant tells me a lot of good things. First of all, Steve Nash, first-year coach. Remember what the Rams did with McVay? They took a guy in Wade Phillips, who had a good head coaching record, by the way. You talk to Wade Phillips players, they're like, yeah, we respected him. He's a good coach. They knew McVay is so young. He's like 30 at the time. They need a guy with some gravitas, a guy who's been in the league, a guy, an incompetent guy, as and as a coordinator. That's what the Nets are doing. Not only do they have an extremely successful and innovative head coach now, essentially as an offensive coordinator, but they got a guy with a lot of coaching experience who's Steve Nash's guy right there.
Well,
D'Antoni is the muscle behind the operation now, is what you're saying.
Hold on. I don't recall saying that it was a bad hire. I said I don't care. I did not say that Mike D'Antoni could not coach, particularly on offense. I did not say he was awful. I said I don't care.
You know what Kyrie's going to put up this year?
Hold on for a second. Here's the reason why. Let me bring up, since you bring up people from all other sports and stuff like that, let me bring up a guy by the name of Mike Tomlin.
Go ahead.
You know anything about Mike Tomlin before he got hired by the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Right. It was like.
What I'm saying to you is, my problem, and one of these days, you figure it out when I say it, but you keep letting it go when it comes to other subjects. My position is consistent. I have a problem with retreads constantly receiving one opportunity.
This is not that.
I know that. That's why I said I don't care, but I don't mind. I just don't care. What I'm saying is, as long as he didn't become a head coach, passing over a bunch of people, I don't have a problem with it. The point is, when you have coached for so many years, ultimately, can I ask you to be a champion? If you've been a coach in the league for 16, 17, 20 years,
can I ask you, if you've had the best roster in the league, one year, you can.
Listen, you could talk about, my man Champ just texted me talking about Joe Johnson injury away. You could talk about when Robert Horry, you know, hip-checked Steve Nash into the scorer's table and got suspended.
D'Antoni's never had the best roster.
Excuse me. He's never had the best roster. Listen, or you could sit up there and say, he had a pretty damn good roster if he coached and more than one side of the ball, he would have won.
He had rosters that he took farther than most coaches who ever lived would have taken.
And he also had rosters that people looked and said, excuse me, if your damn self coach some damn defense, you might win something.
Never did he have a roster where you said that's the best team in the league, but sometimes he got that roster closer to winning a championship than most other coaches would have.
You picked the Clippers. I picked the Lakers. It was close.
I have no recollection of it.
Fine. It was close. No harm, no foul. It was close. But the point is, coaching has a lot to do with certain things. Not that that's applicable in that situation, because we know Doc Rivers could coach. My point to you is, if you're close enough, sometimes it could come down to that.
Kyrie Irving is about to average 30-10. Okay, just watch what happens.
So what? Are they going
to
win?
Well, we do have to leave the discussion there, because we still have a lot more First Take to get to, but I appreciate the enthusiasm and the energy.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.